Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Finally, we are back in Denver, and what better welcome to get than almost half a foot of snow, something like that.
Half a foot of snow this week, and then last weekend, I think it was 10 inches was the official count, and interesting that it looks like this is going to set the February record for snowfall in Denver, barring something unexpected in the next few days. So from a month where we've basked in balmy weather to a month now where we're encased in snow, that's Colorado. You know, that's it's like the NFL. You never know what's coming next.
Well, my 1988 Volvo is it enjoyed the past month or two a lot more than this month. We had a fun drive this morning and last night. I guess that was Wednesday night, about an hour on I-25 in Colorado. So that was a bit of a fun drive. Well, you know, a little bit of sliding on some curves. But
well, that might be more the tires, because I think Volvo, I mean, that's a Swedish car. Mm-hmm. You'd think it could they were designed to handle stuff like this. My parents had a Volvo. They had a 76 Volvo that when I was a kid. And that they said, like, they used to have mechanisms to where you could, you know, heat it up in your garage.
Oh, the heating's great.
Yeah, because it was designed for, you know, a Swedish climate.
The only thing is that this was like one of the last years before they actually just made four-wheel drive. Rear wheel drive. That's the main problem.
It's still rear. Yeah, that makes sense.
But anyway, we're back from Indianapolis, back from the combine. We got to learn a lot of things, not only about the players, but we learned some interesting tidbits from John Elway and Gary Kubiak as they start heading into this personnel process. Just in the next 2 or 3 months, we've got obviously free agency starting in about a week, and then we get into the draft process. Pro days are starting in about a week or two, and then the draft is obviously in the beginning of May. What did you take away from what John Elway or from what Gary Kubiak said as they look at their roster and what they want to do with it? Obviously, you have to kind of game plan for what classes are strong, either in free agency or in the draft. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's a good point about the classes, because you look at some positions that may be positions of need, you know, say tight end, if the Broncos lose some or all of Julius Thomas, Virgil Green, and Jacob Tammy. In that case, if they lost all three of them, I think the solution would be to draft and free agency, I think, because you'd have to really reconstruct the unit from the ground up.
We had a conference call with Mel Kiper this morning, and he was saying the tight end draft class is pretty weak. Do you agree? I know you were pretty high on Clive Wofford out of Miami.
I'm high on some guys, but you know, I'm high on Clive Wofford. I'm high on Max Williams. I like Wes Saxton from South Alabama as a potential value guy on the third day, perhaps, maybe right there in the fourth round. A little concerned about his injury history, but he's been productive, and he had a very good combine as well. So the field and the field stuff on film and the workout, they mesh pretty well. So you can see there's a good player there, but not many. I mean, you look at Max Williams and you look at Clive Wofford, it shows that at the top it's not very strong, because no one's talking about them in the top 10 or top 15 picks. You're looking at them, the sweet spot starting right toward the end of the first round with those guys. So it's thin. It's thin at the top, and then again, and then Nick O'Leary's another guy from Florida State who is in the mix, and I think he's thought of as a blocker, but I think he's a little bit underrated as a pass catcher. And certainly working with Jameis Winston, he had some big games down at Florida State. There are guys there, maybe not as many. I'm not of the Mel Kiper persuasion that says it's a terrible group. It's not a terrible group. It's just not a very deep group, and I think people are looking at it a little bit askance because there's no one really at the top. But if you're the Broncos, you're sitting at 28. You're not concerned about, you know, where it is at the top. You know, if there's a guy that you can take in the first 10 to 15 picks, you're concerned about whether the value is going to be there at 28 if you decide to take a tight end. And I think with Max Williams and Clive Wofford, I think it would be decent to good value. And frankly, I don't think either one of those guys would be there at the end of the second round. So While it is possible they could decide to trade down, get an extra pick or two at some point, and get their guy early in the second round, kind of like they did with Derek Wolfe in 2012, that's possible. But even at the end of the first round, I don't think either would be a real baffling reach.
Now, while we're on the topic of tight ends, in the free agent class, there are a couple who are very familiar with our coaching staff. You have James Casey, who most recently has played for the Eagles. He was a special teams dynamo for them, earning, I think, a $14 million contract. And he did really well with them, and he's also served with the Texans under Gary Kubiak. He was the guy Kubiak drafted, played not only as a tight end, he had a good year in, I think, 2012, but he was also a lead blocker as a fullback, helping Arian Foster get to 1,400 yards.
Yeah, he's a classic Swiss Army knife guy. You know, you can put him at tight end, you can put him at H-back, you can put him at fullback. He's got multiple uses on special teams. There's a lot of things that you can get out of James Casey. Now, if James Casey is starting on a regular basis, I think that might be a little bit of a stretch. He started nine games in 2012, seven in 2011. So he was a part-time starter. Not a real explosive guy in the passing game, but again, there's a lot of little things that he does well. And you're looking at the Broncos roster, John Elway and Gary Kubiak reiterated this at the Combine. They're going to have a fullback on this roster, and they're going to use a fullback to some degree. Maybe not extensively, but they're going to use it. They're going to use a fullback, so they need someone to do that. Maybe it's a guy like James Casey. Maybe it's Juwan Thompson adding a few pounds. That's something that that Elway spoke of.
That's also last something week. I was talking to the Duke head coach, who obviously coached Juwan. I asked him about how Juwan would fit at fullback. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, yeah, he can definitely play that position in a lot of positions. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, he's a guy who played at Duke not only as a running back, but they actually stuck him in there as a linebacker.
He started against Virginia Tech, back in 2013, and played pretty well at linebacker, and had a lot of special teams uses as well. He's another hammer home the cliche that the Swiss Army knife. The thing is, the Broncos historically have liked their fullbacks to have skills with the football. I'm going back to the Shanahan era, when Gary Kubiak was here for most of that. You're looking at Howard Griffith. I think he's probably the standard bearer, starting fullback in the World Championship years. And he was an extremely prolific tailback in college at the University of Illinois, who bulked up and became a quality NFL fullback. Another guy, Mike Anderson, he had the big season as a rookie in 2000 and then had another 1,000-yard season in 2005. For a couple of years in between there, he was a fullback. He was a lead blocker for Clinton Portis, but he could also make plays with the football, catching passes out of the backfield, and also getting the ball on handoffs a few times a game. So that's why Juwan Thompson, I think, may intrigue them as a fullback, because you found out last year that he has some significant skills and ability to make plays with the football. I mean, he had the Broncos' longest run in 3 years, and we saw what he could do at the goal line, and we saw going back to the preseason what he could do in space when he caught passes. So he might be a perfect fit.
And so we've established that. I mean, outside of fullback, but we've also talked about the tight end. And if you went back a couple of weeks, everyone was thinking this team's going to draft an offensive lineman. This team's going to draft an offensive lineman. And I'm looking at all these mock drafts, and I'm looking at what they say the Broncos need. And it's defensive line, linebacking core, and then you have tight end. I mean, is the linebacker probably one of their top positions they need to draft for, as far as maybe – I mean, I've seen inside linebackers. I've seen edge rushers that they think would be good fits. Is that an early thing that you think they're looking at?
I think you're looking at edge rushers because of the depth of this draft. And if you have someone who unexpectedly falls to 28, maybe you think about it. A goal of free agency is to patch the holes on the roster to a degree to where you can go into the draft and say, we're taking the best player available. You know, the Broncos have done a pretty good job of that. Last year, the only thing that you could really perceive as a pressing need going into the draft was an extra cornerback because you had Chris Harris coming off of the torn ACL. And, you know, you had Kayvon Webster there. You'd already signed Aqib Talib, but you really, you know, with Harris, you know, still some question marks about him at the time. You knew that you might need another cornerback to get through the year, if Harris's rehab had not gone as hoped. So Bradley Roby did fill a need. This year, you know, if they can take care of the pressing needs in free agency, and also by, you know, bringing some guys up on the roster. I mean, both John Elway and Gary Kubiak were speaking highly of guys like Michael Schofield, last year's third-round pick, who never got a jersey. And, you know, we can debate the wisdom or lack thereof regarding that move, but it looks like he's going to have a legitimate shot, some playing time at right tackle, as Elway specifically noted. You have Cody Latimer. He's going to be a factor at wide receiver. You know, Wes Welker is a free agent. It seems like it would be a little bit of an upset if he comes back. And you have the freedom to move Manuel Sanders inside. If you go three wide, you can line up Cody Latimer outside. I think he's going to have a bigger role. And even Kubiak mentioned Matt Paradis, a sixth-round pick out of Boise State, as a possibility at center, as a guy that really liked, and he even made the situational comparison, not necessarily the skill comparison, to Tom Nalen. I want to make that clear, but he did say, hey, you know, I inherited a Nalen when I got here in 1995 as the offensive coordinator. He worked out pretty well. So I think you're going to see them look to in-house solutions for some positions. I think you're going to see them bring in some other guys in free agency. But if they can go in to the draft with a good idea of saying, okay, this is a good starting 22-plus situational guys like a third receiver, nickelback, et cetera. If they can do that, then I think there's any direction they can go in. They can go in the tight end direction. They can go for an offensive lineman. Guys like Lyle Collins from LSU, Tyson Brilo from Colorado State, you know, they fit positions that might be certainly something, areas where the Broncos want to bolster the roster, and they might be perfect fits at number 28. The other thing on offensive line, and why I think it at this moment trumps everything, you have two starters who are going to be free agents, of course, Orlando Franklin and Will Montgomery. You're going to move Luis Vasquez back to right guard from right tackle where he played last year. So you're looking at a situation right now where between Vasquez moving and guys who may leave, you might be turning over 80% of the line relative to the alignment that it had in the playoff game last year. So, you know, that's why it's going to be so fascinating to see what the Broncos do, not only in free agency, but also the draft on the offensive line. And also, like I mentioned, with guys like Paradis and Schofield, where are they going to fit? And where Ben Garland might fit as well. He got a few snaps at guard last year in the regular season.
One thing that's really interesting, I mean, I haven't really thought about it much, but when you talked about it, it kind of raised a little point in my head. And that's kind of like the opposite schedule as far as when you go from the NFL to the NBA. The NBA's free agency is after the draft. Yeah. Do you think it's more advantageous for the NFL to – because, I mean, they're different viewpoints when you get down to it. Obviously, the NBA draft gets a lot more top-heavy, but most people, when they get to the draft, you think they always say draft for best player available, but that's a little tough when you don't know the outcome of your free agency situation.
Right, and let's go back. That happened in the NFL in 2011, the lockout year, when because business with veteran players stopped in March, they went ahead and had the draft, and then the free agency period was in a highly compressed window right at the start of training camp. So the Broncos at the time, they were coming off their worst season in 40 years. The roster had holes all over the place. I mean, you know, there's, you know, John Elway did not get hired to a team that was by a team that was successful. He got hired to by a team whose roster was frankly a mess at that time, not a very hollow roster, not much depth there. So they basically had, there were so many needs, and they didn't have free agency to patch them, that it was easy to go ahead and say, let's pick the best player available and know that it was going to fill at least a moderate need. Go back to the first round pick of Von Miller. Now, if you looked at the roster, not outside linebacker, they were going to a 4-3 from the 3-4 at the time. Strong side linebacker slash pass rusher was maybe a secondary need. A primary need was defensive tackle because they just didn't have enough guys of quality at that point to fill out a roster. But so you had Marcell Dareus and you had Von Miller that were sitting there after Cam Newton was off the board at number one. Dareus would have filled a more pressing need at the moment, but it's not like strong side linebacker slash pass rusher was not a need for the Broncos. Remember, they had Elvis Dumervil coming off a torn pec, so no one knew how he was going to be on the other side at that point. So they could take Von Miller as the best player available, and even though it wasn't the top need, it was a need. And then the draft just kind of went from there that they took the best guys, and then when it was all said and done, defensive tackle was still a void. But you look at that draft, they got Orlando Franklin, they got Raheem Moore, they got Julius Thomas in the fourth round, they found a contributor like Virgil Green in the seventh round. You know, picking the best player available for them ended up being a winning strategy. And then in free agency, they kind of, they used the free agency and then also a trade for Broderick Bunkley. They kind of used it to spackle the remaining holes in the roster. And frankly, I think if it had been the reverse, as it usually is, if it had been the reverse that year, I don't think the Broncos would have gone 8-8 and won the division. I think that the roster might not have been constructed in the same way. It just kind of worked out for them. So, you know, I'm not sure if that's ever going to be something we see in the future, but it helped the Broncos that year. I know that.
Was there one team that it really hurt?
Good question. I think the Carolina Panthers misused it because their solution once the lockout ended was to re-sign a lot of their guys or extend guys. And you saw them give a flurry of extensions and renewals. Some of them, you know, Ryan Khalil I couldn't argue with, but, they were investing heavily in fortifying contracts for guys like D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart, they created some redundancies. They kind of made their decisions from the heart and rather from the head. And I wonder if they would have taken a different approach if free agency had come earlier rather than later. Because you know they picked Cam Newton, and at the time I think they felt like, you know, putting a lot of investment in the running game would help Cam Newton through the early difficulties. But in retrospect, they would have been better off, you know, saving that money and not committing these contracts to end up being albatrosses for them down the line. And maybe they would have a better overall offensive line than they did for a couple of years there. I think it was the way they dealt with it, but I think that's the structure that year hurt the Panthers.
Now, that albatross contract you just talked about, D'Angelo Williams, and especially, they just released him. According to him, right. They're planning to release D'Angelo Williams, and of course, a lot of other teams have started cutting some of their deadweight contracts. Reggie Bush, for one, A.J. Hawk from the Packers. Just a lot of contracts are starting to float out there. A lot of free agency is starting to meet with people. And I'm sure you get these questions all the time. I saw the Reggie Bush one last night, and
every guy who gets cut, it seems like I get a question about. It's as reliable as the sunrise.
Now, when you have guys like C.J. Anderson and
Monte Ball and Ronnie Hillman and the aforementioned Juwan Thompson,
then where would Reggie Bush even fit in that equation when he had 300 yards last season?
Well, if he has any of the explosiveness in the open field that he had previously, then you'd say, okay, maybe he could
situational back.
He could have that Ronnie Hillman type role, but I don't see him at this point in his career going into his 10th year, and I think frankly having lost a step in the open field as being an upgrade over Hillman, because remember for someone like him, for Bush, he's going into his 10th year, so you're looking at a veteran minimum of, like, I believe it's $870,000. Yeah, you're better off going with younger guys. AJ Hawk, it depends on whether you view inside linebacker as a pressing need for the Broncos, but to go back to some of the stuff we got out of the combine last week from Elway and Kubiak, they're pointing to Brandon Marshall and Dan Trevathan as being the two inside linebackers, the Mike backer and the Mo backer, as they're referred to in the parlance of the 3-4. So I if you're AJ Hawk, from his perspective, why would you come here when it looks like they've already got an idea who their two starters would be? And then you look on the depth chart, you've got Todd Davis, who started towards the end of the year and got better from week to week. You've got Steven Johnson, who can be who you don't necessarily want him out there every down, but he can be a two-down thumper if need be on the inside. It's not out of the question that they re-sign Nate Irving for at least some depth and as an insurance policy in case Dane Trevathan's knee that was hurt three times last year doesn't hold up this year. I don't see AJ Hawk as representing an upgrade over what the Broncos have and, you know, might have if they choose to re-sign Irving. And I haven't even mentioned the guys they picked last year in the draft on the third day in Corey Nelson and Lamine Barrow. So I don't see where Hawk fits. Certainly, I don't see the value of bringing him in. The guys that were released, I think the most intriguing one's probably Jacoby Jones. Mm-hmm. Just because he comes from Baltimore, and we know about all the Broncos coaches that were with the Ravens last year, and most importantly, because he's a returner, and that's something that at some point the Broncos are going to want to fill. Now, I think they're going to end up filling it through the draft when all is said and done. It's a very deep receiver class among other positions, and I think you can find a receiver / returner type on the third day. They'd hope that guy would be Isaiah Burse last year, who they signed as an undrafted free agent. Had his ups and downs. Wasn't as explosive as they would have wanted on punt returns. So it wouldn't surprise me if they target a receiver / returner on day three. And again, while Jacoby Jones offers some attributes that certainly Broncos fans know about well from the playoff game a couple of years back, I don't know that he's going to represent the best value pick when this is a very deep draft for wide receivers, and some of those wide receivers are returners that can help you out. And that goes into something that we were talking about off air a little bit about how your free agency plan is dictated sometimes, and also a bit on the air about how your free agency plan is dictated by what the draft looks like as well. And if you've got a deep class at a position, maybe you're not as likely to target that in free agency.
And one of the talk about specialists and punt returners, kick returners. Ted Ginn Jr. released, mm-hmm. back on the market. He's a guy who's been explosive for a while, but has had some fumble problems, especially last year, had a couple fumbles on punt returns. But average over 10 yards return, and that's going back for 5 years straight. So, I mean, if you're looking for a specialist, he could be a possible answer. I know he's been, I think someone was saying that he was going to meet with the Panthers,
where he played in 2013,
right?
As well, they were under a severe cap crunch last year. It's easing a bit this year. Would not surprise me if they would they'd bring him back. I don't know if you follow the stuff that Dave Gettleman, their GM, says, but he kind of talks about how they've had to, shop at the clearance aisle, the dollar. And last year they shopped at the dollar store. This year they've moved up to Target.
Yeah. Well, and if you need a quarterback, he apparently completed his first and only pass of his career last year, Ted Ginn. So he's batting 100%, 10 yards, 10 yards a pass, I guess you could say.
So what is his rating, like 100?
108.
108. Yeah, because it's the completion, 10 yards. 10 yards an attempt, but no touchdown.
If he had no interceptions,
yeah,
too, I might add.
Yeah, if he had the one for 10 yards for a touchdown, I believe that would take him to the 158.3.
I think
perfection.
So if you need a quarterback, don't be hesitant to look outside of these labels. Don't be so focused on labels. That's just some general good advice.
Outside the box thinking. Yes. Expand yourself.
I think free agency begins... what's that? 10th? 10th, I think, March 10th.
One, two, three. Yep, 10th. I had to, yeah, Sunday's the 1st, so it's a week from next Tuesday is when it begins at 2 p.m. Mountain Time. And that's Mountain Daylight Time then by then, isn't it? Because Daylight Time kicks in on the second Sunday of March. So, but there's also the quote-unquote legal tampering period that you have for 3 days before that. That's where any team can talk to a potential free agent on the phone, and they can even negotiate contract terms, but you can't bring them in. But and certainly I'm sure the Broncos will be very, very busy talking to people in the days leading up to that. You look back at last year, on the first night, by the first night, that Tuesday, they'd re-signed Andre Caldwell. Now, there's no tampering. You could talk to your own guys whenever. But they'd agreed to terms with T.J. Ward, and they had agreed to terms with Aqib Talib by Tuesday night. And there's no way that happens unless you're laying the groundwork over the first 3 days. And that's part of the reason why now free agency seems to happen really fast, is because you're able to have those days to talk and kind of hammer out some terms. And then at 2 p.m. Mountain Time on Tuesday, you know, you've got a flurry of transactions.
And so I guess next week we'll be kind of kicking into gear here with free agency stuff. We'll be DenverBroncos.com, obviously our site. We'll be up and rolling with daily position breakdowns. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have everything you need. We'll start doing, I think, videos as well. And we'll start rolling here. And it'll just be clicking until the draft in May.
Yeah, I'll be looks like I'll be getting in front of we have this big Microsoft Surface touchscreen down at the control room at the stadium, and so we're working on getting the highlights together, and I'll be breaking down some of the guys that I think that might interest the Broncos. Certainly they're at positions that look to be needs at this point. Some guys at the top of the market, but also some potential value guys down the line. I think, you know, even though the Broncos have what, you know, looks like it's going to be now with an expected cap increase, looks like it's up to the $27 million range in terms of salary cap room. You know, John Elway has said they're going to franchise Demaryius Thomas if they cannot work out a long-term deal. That's going to chew up just under $13 million of that cap. So that space is going to go pretty quick. It wouldn't surprise me if there are some cap clearing moves for the Broncos in the coming days to create some more room. But the Broncos aren't going to be able to spend all their money in one place. They're going to have to be judicious, and I think they like everyone else are going to look for some value guys. Maybe guys who are not on their second contract, which is where the big money usually is, but on that third contract that are getting toward their late 20s, early 30s, on some 2-year deals that are a little more cap friendly than the second contract guys who are really in their prime. That wouldn't surprise me.
So we'll be back next week. I'm sure we'll have a lot more news coming out in the weeks to come. So be sure to tune in next week for the podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. I want to thank everyone for listening. I'm Ben, and he's Mace. And thanks for tuning in.